If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. It's me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. This is Colombia Calling, episode number 246. I trust you've enjoyed the last episodes. We had Fair Trade Coke with Janneke Niemeyer, no relation to the Niemeyer from Holland here in Colombia. And of course, the most recently, we had Abby Steele, who is the assistant professor of political science at the University of Amsterdam, and we're talking about her book, Democracy and Displacement in Colombia's Civil War. Anyway, so today we have a very special guest here with me we're in Bogota, Matt Yuki, who's been here for 8 years. He's a consultant, a business journalist. He writes for the likes of The Guardian and other places. Very well read, a knowledgeable man from London. And we're going to talk a little bit about the issues taking place in Colombia regarding this presidency and President Duque's recent calls. It's the mandate now to completely criminalize even the smallest doses of marijuana. And, well, why have we got Matt on the show? Well, because he is behind the magazine Colombia Cannabis Investor. So welcome on Colombia Calling.
Thanks, Richard.
you look at me like that. It's like, so tell me, I mean, you know, we've all got side jobs, us journalists. We've all do various things because freelance, you know, you've got to make things end. How did you come to set up the Colombia Cannabis Investor?
Okay, so I came to Colombia for the first time. First time in 2006, actually, on a holiday, but then I had the opportunity to come back in a working capacity in 2010. And I was working on a publication looking at the economy, in particular the mining sector, the oil and gas sector. Then I was writing about the mining sector, business journalism, looking at companies, the effect of the industry on the economy, investments, challenges, those kind of things. Then I've, since about 2015, I've been freelancing both as a journalist and a consultant, mainly doing sort of political risk analysis of the Colombian political situation, especially how it affects investment in business here. Mm-hmm. From my experience, I saw a lot of, in the early 2000s, and then in the early 2010s, we saw first a wave of Canadian oil explorers coming into Colombia looking for oil deposits, and then a lot of Canadian miners coming into Colombia looking for gold and copper deposits in Colombia. Now, a lot of those experienced lots of problems, both with environmental regulations, communities, politics, regulatory change, and I think there's often a lack of information or lack of knowledge amongst international investors about the political situation and the true challenges faced on the ground here in Colombia. So, over the course of last year, there was a lot of news in the international press, New York Times and Washington Post and a whole bunch of others talking about the Colombian cannabis boom, the legalization of medicinal cannabis in Colombia and how that could boost the economy and the opportunities for rural jobs. But I realized there was a lack of sort of in-depth knowledge. There's a lot of regulatory change here, political issues. And so we have this monthly publication aimed to inform people about what's going on to them, going into depth in the main issues.
Well, it's such an interesting topic here. I mean, so because of course we've got the stigma of drugs, let's say. I mean, just open as broad as that. Colombia cocaine, Colombia, of course, the marijuana boom in the, I guess, the 70s, or marimberos. It's got to be an uphill struggle to convince Colombians that, on the whole, because you're going to have your niche markets who say, yeah, I understand. They're doing this in Israel, they're doing this in Canada, they're doing this elsewhere. Colombia should be able to do this, but isn't this, you know, appealing? You know, the Colombian mindset with all of this just stuck in this confusion around the stigma, the illegality, the conflict, and so on. You must be in an uphill struggle on a day-to-day basis.
In terms of doing the work, it's actually not an uphill struggle.
Okay.
There's always something to write about, and that's, I suppose, that is one of the... If this was an easy market to do business in, then people wouldn't need business intelligence and up-to-date news. They would just take everything at face value.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of things that happen in Colombia which you can't take at face value. There's a lot of assumptions people make by hearing something that comes out of Bogota, which has absolutely no relevance to what's going on in Santander or Cauca or the Llanos. So with regards to the obvious topic... Yeah, for the president to come out and have one of his first social policies is the sort of criminalization and the stigmatization of marijuana use obviously sends very mixed messages to investors, and a lot of people have come to me. I should say that particular policy, which allows the police to confiscate any amount of sort of recreational marijuana in the streets, doesn't affect the Colombian medicinal cannabis industry. But it's definitely, there's a lot of things that need to be done for the Colombian medical cannabis industry to get ahead, to develop. There's a lot of regulations that need to be changed or altered to make this an efficient process. And when you see this sort of political tone and message coming out of the Casa Nariño, it doesn't look good. But I think there's reasons to be positive about it as well. I'm not sure Duque is so serious about that. I think it's a... I'm not sure he's calling it a dog whistle or red meat to his right wing base to show that, you know, he's taking their sort of reactionary demand seriously. There's a chance it could be declared unconstitutional as well. So I don't think we need to worry too much.
Well, I think you know he's done very carefully crafting himself as the innovator and a sort of almost in a. He wants to be seen almost, we shouldn't say third way because that's the Santos kind of thing, but he's trying for that vein a little bit with someone else perhaps pulling the strings behind him. But his facade is all this. I just think, yeah, I figure that criminalization of the minimum dosage and what have you is just a hat tip, as you say. Or what's you say, whistle? Was it dog whistle?
Dog whistle. Yeah.
I would say, yeah, a hat tip to his more extreme base, just to keep them quiet in these opening months of the presidency.
It should be said the guy plays mean guitar, so I don't think anybody plays guitar that well competes, particularly against. I refuse to believe he can be as reactionary as he's claiming.
I know what I read that. I read that piece. I just think it was in Time magazine by Wesley, who's been on the show, Wesley Tomaselli, and who I know for a while. And he plays a mean guitar, and he likes Pearl Jam, and it just upsets me because I like Pearl Jam, and I don't want the president to like Pearl Jam. I don't see that. I guess it's because he's actually. I think I'm older than the president, so that's as tragic as it gets by about 2 weeks. So here I am doing a podcast, and he's in the Palacio de Nariño. But nonetheless, but talking about this, I mean, it's just such a fascinating issue because I don't, as you said, it won't affect, you know, what he says really won't affect this medicinal side of things. So, I mean, tell my listeners a little bit about how big this market is in Colombia, because I think it's pretty huge and people don't know about it.
Yeah, so in 2016, the first moves were made to legalize medicinal marijuana. I'm coming to this, you know, I heard about it, read about it, didn't really investigate it until earlier this year. And it's quite clear that some people have already done very well in this industry. Basically, what the Colombian government allows is to ensure the medicinal market, the commercialization of flower, the sort of high THC. THC is the psychoactive element of the plant. Those can't be commercialized. So you can't sell cannabis flower, because that would mean that some people ever smoke it and get rolled up and smoke it. So what you have to do is you have to grow your cannabis, you have to get a license for THC cannabis, or a license for CBD, which is the more sort of calming effects and helps with insomnia, those kind of things. You get your license, you can grow, but then you have to produce it into an end product, be it an oil, an extract, a spray, something like that.
Okay.
So the big boom here is you look at Colombia somewhere. Have you seen the film Pájaros de Viento, or Birds of Passage?
I've not seen
it. It's a very good film, and I highly recommend it, but that's all about the cannabis wars in the 1960s and 70s in La Guajira. One of the great things about Colombia, when you'll see a lot of these companies when they talk about it, is Colombia's got excellent growing conditions. It's got 12 hours of sunlight, it's got various different altitudes, nice temperatures, so it's a lot easier to grow cannabis outside than in Canada, for example. It also has a very good flower, or experienced flower industry, so you have a lot of the technical skills and materials and services needed for the industry. So it's attracted a lot of attention. The UN, although I'm not sure how serious it is to say, the UN has an international narcotics board, which basically sets aside quotas for each country each year to how much medicinal cannabis and medicinal opiates, poppies, you're allowed to grow each year. And Colombia actually this year, 2018, has 40% of the total quota for the world, which is, you know, the biggest.
40% is a huge amount.
A huge amount. It's the best. I think after that, the USA has maybe 20%, and then Israel 10%. These things aren't taken entirely seriously, and Canadians are growing anyway.
Yeah.
But the point being is that, you know, it's a recognized opportunity here. And so very early on, we had a few local companies, or people who were very well tuned into the Colombian market, were basically applying for their licenses and acquiring their cultivation and processing licenses. And then in the last 3 or 4 months, we've seen some of those local companies sell out to big Canadian producers for a very hefty profit. So we're seeing three of the biggest Canadian cannabis companies are Canopy Growth Corp, Afria, and Aurora, and all three of them have taken stakes in Colombia since May.
That's huge. And 40%, I mean, what kind of figure are we looking at of how much that is?
Like 40 tons of extract. I'm going to have to check.
40 tons of
extract. So, you know,
this is something that could take up proper slack in the economy here. I mean, we're talking about a proper, cash crop.
So, I mean, this year, from the estimates, I mean, again, it's very difficult to get figures on this. Mm. And so looking at the three biggest companies, or three or four biggest companies, there are also local companies here as well who haven't sold out to Canadians. There's companies called Chiron Life Sciences and Pharmacia, who are published as well in international press.
Yes.
They're also growing as well. So we've got five or six very big companies. And they're going to be investing, at least $250 million this year in foreign investment. You know, so it's not bad, but that's, I think, really it's the tip of the iceberg compared to future productivity. We have, there's lots of discussions about their strategies or the way going forward. I recently met a company who are out in Meta in the Llanos, which is flat, bit distant from everything, but their plan there is to basically mechanize cannabis production, which would make for huge territories and sort of growing areas, and then producing large volumes of extract for medicinal purposes.
I think it's fascinating. I can just imagine that. So now that, you know, changing from palm oil to cannabis, I can see it as the next big thing. But, you know, it's this contradiction between the government and between industry. But of course, it's always going to exist these levels. He's going to say one thing, and then because, you know, the country needs the money, the country needs the income, the country needs to diversify the economy. I mean, we need to move away. It's absolutely fascinating. I had no idea that it was that established already. And so I guess my next move in life is to just set up a little farm and sell out to a Canadian company.
Yes, well, you might encounter a few challenges. That is what I think. Some very smart, or some might say well-connected, political families have done very well from this by being on top of regulations and basically going through the processes of acquiring the land and getting their licenses, and sort of any company coming in and say, you know what, we don't want to, we can put down several million dollars to avoid to avoid that 6 month or 8 month process and have our license and have our plot, we'll just do that. So that's what those people have. I think that's happened. There might be some more of that going on.
I've missed the boat.
What they're looking, the big challenge, well, there are many challenges, but one of the key challenges now for the companies who are with their projects up and running is finding a way to take that to market. A lot of people will look at it from the extent of, look at this huge Canadian, possibly US markets in terms of exporting. Look, we can be like, you know, a China of marijuana. We can grow it cheaply here and then export it off to North America or Europe. But there's also very interesting moves being made by some companies. Leader of these is probably Chiron, who understand that there's big challenges in terms of regulations and financing for export projects, and they're looking much closer at the local medicinal or local healthcare sector here. It's $4 billion in debt as a very large health bill. The Minister of Health, especially under the previous government, the current government, we don't really know what's going on there because they haven't even mentioned cannabis so far. They're very keen to reduce the drugs bill. And now if they can develop, but it's an estimated 5 million people need palliative care or CAPAP, I should say, cannabis-based products, things like insomnia, PTSD, and anxiety, for example, people affected by the conflict. There's lots of studies going on right now about cannabis-based relaxants, basically chill you out, help you get to sleep, stop you having nightmares and that kind of thing. There's a lot of sort of epidemic Colombian diseases could be treated by a local medicine if the companies and the government pull it all together.
But we don't know what's going on yet.
In terms of, well, with the current government, it hasn't been mentioned, and that's frustrating.
Yeah.
Because under the previous, like Santos as well, President Santos often talked, not directly, but was, you know, clearly giving the message that he was in favor of drugs reform in a lot of ways. And then we had a Minister of Health, Alejandro Gaviria, who was just one of the best ministers the government, the Santos administration ever had. Very forward thinking, went to town on the pharmaceutical companies, you know, increased the right, basically put in place a statutory law which allowed for all Colombians to receive the best treatment by law. But then, you know, he went after the pharmaceutical companies would be making very large margins, especially under Uribe. And so it's changed a lot, but it's still early days with this administration. We'll know what the Ministry of Health and the Ministry of Justice are going to do about that.
That was a reference there to Novartis, wasn't it? It was the drugs and
Novartis. Well, Novartis is one example. That's just like, yeah, that's just the sign. That's just the bellwether, right? That's just meant to show. Now, basically what they did in terms of drugs was say, now when you have drugs coming into the market, the statutory law says that if you're Colombian and your doctor says you need this treatment, it doesn't matter which, if it's a registered treatment in Colombia, you have a legal right to that.
Excellent.
It is excellent, but that means that what happens is you might have a good cancer drug which costs X, $1,000 a year, and then a US company brings one with him and it costs $20,000 a year, but it's got a 5% better, a 5% improved recovery rate or treatment rate. The doctors will prescribe the expensive one who's going to want to, and that was something that was sort of breaking the healthcare system. He went to town very much to put, now companies coming into the market have to do their cost efficacy studies at the first step before they get their registration rather than afterwards. So you get approved to have your thing in here and they set the price straight away. They don't have it sort of lying there where it might get picked up and abused.
Where a lot of conversation with my wife occurs. She's an economist and epidemiologist who works in this and does consultancy on this sort of stuff, but doesn't let me then talk about it.
Okay.
It's off the record. Well, this is fascinating. We're going to take a short break and come back with Matt Yuki, who's a consultant business journalist and also the founder of the Columbia Cannabis Investor online magazine, I guess.
At the moment, it's a website and emailed PDF.
There you go. But equally, I mean, it's for the market, and so it's out there, so check it out. And we'll be back and we'll talk further about this with Matt in the second segment of this show. This is episode 146. I'm Richard McColl for Columbia Calling. Don't go away. And we're back. This is Columbia Calling, episode 246. As you know, we're talking to Matt Yuki, who's from London, and we're talking about the cannabis industry, we're talking about the healthcare system, we're talking all about everything a bit here in Columbia. Matt's been here for 8 years, writes for a number of publications, and it can be found very easily online, but also, you know, you can follow that his PDF, or what's it? I guess it's an email update magazine, Columbia Cannabis Investor, and he's on Twitter at Col Canin. So just check
two N's in pants.
Yes, Colcannin. Okay, so if you want to get onto that, because we've got to plug it, we've got to help people out. You know, that's just the whole reason we're all here to help one another. I believe that. So let's talk about this. We've talked a bit about the investment. We've talked about the fact that the medicinal cannabis market could be a huge segment, or let's say, of like an agricultural industry. Very positive. Obviously, it's not without its problems. But when I read, you know, one of your most recent pieces about it, there are three issues, and you can tell me more about them. I'll just read the three issues out, and you can go into it. One is the regulatory confusion here in Colombia around the growth. Two, local growing conditions, and three, security and community relations. Let's just plunge into those. How would you like to start and say, well, okay, regulatory confusion in Colombia. Everything's confusing when it comes to bureaucracy here.
Well, that's okay. So there was lots of confusions at the beginning about the process of getting licenses. Then they have to register seeds with ICA, which is an agricultural...
Oh yeah.
You have to register, but you can't even just register the seed. You have to register it for each different area of the country, and there's 10 or 12 different regions, and you have to show that it grows there as well. Wow. with other areas. That's a complex situation. I'm not sure anybody's going to sort of need a deadlock.
It's like an Invima, but for agricultural stuff.
Yeah, sort of. But I mean, you have to go through Invima again when you
really?
Get the product. So that's going to be a challenge for people. Invima doesn't recognize the cannabis plant as a medicinal drug at the moment, so that involves another regulatory change. So what we're seeing, and it's not unusual, Colombia sometimes might be exaggerated, is the message from the president, or this sort of the legalization of cannabis or medicinal cannabis came in 2016, 2017, came with huge support from the Congress. But it's always one of those things where you put that in place, and then as people get excited, you find a bit like... Not quite as bad as Brexit, but you find a million different, dozens of other areas where there's, you know, an inarticulation of policy. And one of the things you'll find is the big issue is, you know, these companies have to deal with the Ministry of Agriculture, the Ministry of Health, the Ministry of Justice, ICA, the Colombian Narcotics Board. There's lots of different processes. And so the biggest companies are sort of pushing that through with very strong legal teams, for example, lobbying teams to get those kind of things changed. They're taking sort of different ways around it. I think in the coming days, one of the companies is going to, Chiron will, which will, maybe it's already happened now when this goes out, but Chiron will be releasing a line of cosmetics using CBD to show that, you know, there's supposedly benefits for the skin and those kind of things. Nobody's really producing a medicinal product at the moment. They want to get there, but there's a lot of regulations to go through. That is complicated enormously by financial regulations in this country. I've spoken to cannabis companies who set up a business and then no bank would work with them, and then even worse, they came and when they found out they were working in the cannabis industry, cancelled their personal bank accounts and their credit cards because it's seen as toxic. The Colombian banks are incredibly tightly regulated with regards to money laundering and illegal funds, and also most of them go through have a US bank, and in the US cannabis is still illegal. There's also stories in the US about how people, you know, cannabis companies paying their suppliers or distributors have to ship money in or truck money backwards and forwards in security vehicles because there's no way they can make an electronic transfer because they can't have a bank. So the Colombians are also affected by that. So that's on the regulations. It's a pretty complicated area.
You mean, so you can have a legitimately, legitimate business that's approved governmentally, but then you can't, you know, you can't move money.
You can't bring money into the country because everybody's using a US intermediary bank.
Yeah.
And the US intermediary bank sees that you're moving money for the purposes of cannabis. To let you know, when I first started sending the Colombia cannabis investor out, all the things like MailChimp and Constant Contact, nobody would send my newsletter out because it had the word cannabis in it. So even the sort of US-based tech companies won't work with companies with the word cannabis in their name.
It's just amazing. One side taking from the other side, just playing off. Just the complexities. It must be exciting to work in that because of the complexities. Because I guess, as you say, it's never dull. You'll see these obstacles from far away. So that's a regulatory confusion. Now, local growing conditions.
I'm very, very far from an expert on this. There's only speaking to other people. Hmm. There's, you know, if you're a foreign company and you've worked in Canadian medicinal cannabis and US medicinal cannabis, you might have some seeds or plants that you know will produce a certain type of medicine to a certain percentage of THC and CBD. Mm. And one of the easy solutions, therefore, is, hey, let's take it to Colombia. We've got lots of sunlight and grow it here. But Colombia also has, you know, it has its own pests, for example.
Yeah.
It has a flower industry which has been using pesticides and putting chemicals in the soil, so it might not be resistant to that. So a lot of these companies, you've got to get the plant and make it resistant or suitable to or adaptive to the local conditions. And yesterday I was had dinner with a Canadian guy who's working in one of the companies here, and he's a very, very well known breeder of seeds. And so his firm is very much getting towards the end of licensing, having sort of a sexual selection license, a sexual breeding license for cannabis crops. A lot of people are only going for their asexual license, so you take a branch and reproduce that. So that would be a first challenge. But that's one of the things, and then also met some absolutely brilliant Colombo Medellin based young guys who, you know, they haven't got the Canadian capital, but those guys have been growing marijuana for decades and know exactly what works here. So there's like this sort of, there's people with the capital and people with the knowledge, and they've got to get together to make sure that the right plant is planted in the right conditions and we don't have any terrible harvest.
This issue of pesticides, I think, is very important because, of course, I mean, it has to be, to sell to the Canadian market, it's, I don't know how many hundred things it's got to go through. The American market isn't as stringent, I believe. But also, I mean, the pests here, the tropics, there's everything. So that's got to be tough.
Yeah, and there'll be very strict regulations. One of the things you need to have proper analysis of heavy metals and pesticides and those kind of things, and accurately measuring THC and CBD content. So again, there's lots of sort of areas for ancillary services to come in and help out with those processes, quality control, and those kind of things.
Amazing. And then, of course, security and community relations. I mean, that's a lot of it speaks for itself. We've got the security issues, the criminality surrounding, the justified problems in Colombia, and of course, community relations. When you get these big companies coming in into, let's say, sacred lands belonging to Aboriginal groups, or Indigenous groups from here, First Nations, however you want to put it, it's got to be tough. Again, this issue. It's kind of like mining groups going in. You say, we'll build you a school, but this is what's going to happen. How are these companies? I guess, I don't know, when you get a big company like this, are they holistic? Are they coming in sustainably? Are they coming in with good ideas? Or are they just coming and saying, we're going to make money?
Well, the coming cannabis boom does have the advantage of that the mining companies have made every conceivable mistake regards to local communities, Indigenous groups, Afro-Colombian populations. I mean, they've written the rule book on how to do this badly. So avoid those mistakes would be
one of the primary things. I think one of the areas that I often find speaking to Canadians or North American investors is, I mean, you might speak to people still who go, oh, you know, you speak to somebody in North America or Europe, and you mentioned Colombia, a lot of people will just say, oh, Pablo Escobar, cocaine, that's boring, right?
Yeah.
But there's also now, I think as a result of the peace process, perhaps, there's also now this idea that, oh yeah, no, Colombia's safe to invest.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's just a flip from black to white, and all of this, obviously, should go without saying, is a shade of gray, and it's nuanced, and there's areas of the country, maybe outside of Bogota, where there's you know, like greenhouses and for the flower industry for years, areas which are very safe, you know, very open to commerce and foreign investors. There's areas where it's not a good idea to do a project. Now, there's areas which have serious security problems. I was speaking to one guy, so he pointed out, if you harvest this crop and you put it on the back of a truck, and the local mafia know that you're harvesting a load of weed on this day, and you're driving that truck down a little country lane to get to your processing facility, there's a very high probability that that would be jacked, and that product would be taken out and, you know, sold in the black market in 2 days, basically. If you look at what's happened with one of the mining groups recently, Continental Gold, who operate in Antioquia, they just had 3 geologists killed working on their Berlin project. That's tragic, and it goes to show, it's a seriously well-funded company,
yeah,
that should know how to manage its security. And it goes to show that there's certain parts of this country still where foreign companies coming in and, you know, messing with one of their business lines is not going to go down very well. So all these things need to be taken seriously. Finally, just to point out, communities in Barichara, for example, as well. One issue of mining is a big discussion because the federal government is the legal owner of the subsoil. So the mining companies are like, hey, we've got this contract from the federal government to say we're going to mine here. But local communities have a role in sort of surface projects and can say where they want, where they can basically, they have a say in development and extractive industries in those, as they've been having referendums in which they often turn down the right of miners to work there. Mm. Something similar has happened with one project here where locals in Barichara, yeah, initially proposed that this company was going to be using up the water resource in the region, an important water reservoir. Not sure how that situation has gone. I think there's some resolution, some improvements in that. But I think it's very important to go in there with the right attitude. Choose where you're working properly, get some proper due diligence and political risk assessments, and work out if it is a place that is going to be welcoming of foreign investment and jobs, because not all of them will.
And of course, you can find these lands, let's say, further off, at a better price, but as you're saying, like the easier, safer places, round Bogota, in the hands of a very wealthy families, flower cultivations who've, yeah, been there forever. And so it's going to be tough. I mean, this thing's going to be very hard to do, but it's fascinating. I didn't know around Barichara, but of course it means to me that you know, that geography would be perfect for it. I mean, it's a tobacco country as well, so you can see the similar kind of growth. But you know how robust these plants are. I know it's related, but it's not the same. In my little place in Montbos, the first plant I put in was a coca plant, and that was all of 10 years ago. It's the only one that survived in my garden. I mean, it's had chemicals dropped on it, cement dropped on it, it's had people fall on it, but this thing still grows, you know. And I think, you know, why do we call weed weed? I mean, it's grows like a weed, but of course it's got to be very, very difficult. There are so many different elements to this. I mean, not just the stigma, not just the security, of course. Then you've got the regulatory. Then he's got these conditions and local tropical conditions. But of course, the economic benefits outweighs in the end, and so it will continue to grow. I mean, that's what we'll see, and we'll continue to see that the government saying one thing, and industry, and of course private investment, and of course direct foreign investment in the company, which is, you know, what Duque wants. He's very cleverly marketed himself as the sort of business friendly option. It was, while potentially some of the other options in the elections might have been even more favourable for it. Even the, the left-wing Gustavo Petro would have been possibly even more favourable to this market. But so very interesting, something about which I really know very little. I've talked to a couple of people, and this issue of the banking, I just keep coming back to it. Colombian banks are so difficult to work with. And even I've had, like transfers of £1,000 or $1,000, and I've had to go and present myself and say, this kind of thing, you're laundering money. It's $1,000. I don't even think this makes 0.001% of your foreign income today, and you're calling me in on this. If alarm bells are going off on that, how can they manage an industry of this nature? It's the same thing. It's like Colombia seems to be always running before it can walk, but at the same time trying to be progressive, but being stung by this underlying conservatism that's here. Maybe I'm being too negative, but
sounds
I just
like
feel it.
It's not going to be too negative,
but it just seems to me as like they want to go ahead with it at the same time, and then it hinder themselves. I don't know. Do you have any final points?
Well, this is an issue all cannabis companies should be used to that.
Yeah.
In the US, if you're operating in the US, the legal side in the US is even more murky than it is in Colombia. With the bank, the banking side is obviously a challenge. Some companies are finding innovative ways to go around it by one company here is a local company, but has found its listing in Canada, and that's been easier to get money direct from Canada into Colombia. Others are, going small or focusing on local family investment to start things out, to sort of get something up and running on a small scale before, while they wait for the financial regulations to be put in place. I was going to say something else, but I don't remember that.
It's all right. So, listen, plug yourself a little bit more. What's your website for this, so people can sign up for your newsletter?
So the website is called Colombia Cannabis Investor. The website is colcannin.com. And there you can just enter your email, and then every first Tuesday of the month, we're sending out it's getting to like 6 or 7 pages now. We normally do a feature on, a key topic, an interview with a key stakeholder, focus on a particular company, and then a roundup of all the other news.
Excellent. And of course on Twitter, that's colcannin, as you'd expect, as Matt kindly spelt out for us. Been really interesting. I mean, we've had a bunch of interesting interviews of late, but this is really interesting. And I think we come back to this issue of the struggle, or the power struggle between local and regional elites and the control of territories, and of course the economy in those areas. And it's one of those things, and it all comes back to land, Colombia. It all comes back to land ownership and land use. But fascinating. But so keep your eyes open for Matt's pieces in The Guardian and other places across the globe. Qualified journalists writing about the things that matter here in Colombia. It's been a great pleasure to meet you for the first time and have you here on Colombia Calling. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
You're most welcome. This has been episode 246. I've been Richard McCall, speaking to Matt Yuki. We'll be back next week with another interesting interview on Colombia Calling. And please, of course, share this far and wide, because without you, the listeners, there would be no podcast. So thank you again, and bye-bye for now.